For most people, it's not hard to get the waterworks flowing. A sappy melodrama, a bad breakup, a skinned knee, a wedding ceremony. But just why do we cry anyway? Tom Lutz has written a natural history of weeping. Turns out that human beings are great big crybabies.
One of the explanations for why human beings are the only species that cry is because we're the species that discovered fire. And as cavemen with campfires going in the caves, the people who developed the largest lacrimal ducts managed to save their eyes and survive.
So there's no question humans are the only species that cries.
Yes. I mean, I probably shouldn't say there's no question. There are people who argue that elephants, for instance, weep. The problem is that when in distress, animals will squeeze their eyes when they're in great pain, and squeezing eyes can cause a flow of tears over the eyelid that would otherwise drain. So,
which is different somehow from crying. And I guess maybe we need a definition then. I mean, if you say it's because we invented fire, if the equipment is there, And smoke gets in your eyes and you start to cry, I mean, that could happen to other animals as well, right?
Yes, and those are called irritant tears, right? So if a foreign object gets in your eye, or you get poked in the eye, or onions, for instance, are the famous case, irritant tears are produced that lubricate the eye and get the foreign object out. Emotional tears are different. They are actually chemically different. Emotional tears have different levels of hormones and different levels of salts and other substances in them.
I mean, there are so many different things that make people cry. Some people cry out of anger. Some people cry out of fear. Some people cry because they're happy. Or some people cry just because.
Yes. And undoubtedly, some of that is very, very personal. That is how a person is brought up. For instance, we know that in some cultures, two-year-olds cry more than they do in other cultures. We know in some cultures, six-year-olds cry more than they do in other cultures. And that's related to the child-rearing techniques in those cultures. If an infant is immediately comforted and immediately gratified when it cries, it's going to cry more often than an infant that doesn't. And an infant that's completely neglected stops crying altogether. So everybody, of course, has slightly different parenting history, has a slightly different, you know, is made fun of in school for crying more or less. People have developed different habits within cultures as well as among them.
In your study of different cultures, have there been times at which it was more approved of to cry?
Definitely. In the 18th century, crying was a sign of your great refinement. And so if you were a theater goer and you didn't weep at the theater, it showed that you were kind of a heartless cad. And so people wept profusely at the theater. Certainly, warrior tears that I talk about, medieval warrior epics in which warriors were all profuse weepers. You know, when Roland dies, we're told in the Song of Roland, a medieval French epic, that 20,000 knights wept until they fainted and fell off their horses, which is a kind of Monty Python-esque scene, I think. And a certain amount of exaggeration, undoubtedly, in there, literary exaggeration. But it shows that crying was accepted in a way in the army that it wouldn't be today.
Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that we hear, and it's not just the modern army, is tough guys don't cry, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In 20th century America, you would be less of a man, it seems to me, if you were to weep on the battlefield.
Yes, and this idea of male stoicism, I mean, there are ideals of male stoicism since the Greeks, at least, but they take very, very different forms. And the most recent one, that is the one that really begins in the 1890s in America and runs through to today to a certain extent, of that men don't cry, is, number one, false. And number two is only about certain kinds of weeping. When General Schwarzkopf was interviewed on Barbara Walters, he cried, as all of her guests do. And she said, well, generals don't cry. And he said, well, yes, they do. Lee cried, Sherman cried, Lincoln cried, all the great generals cried at different times. And I have cried, he said, at Christmas services for the troops. I wouldn't cry in front of them when I was giving them battle orders. I wouldn't cry when I was fulfilling my role as a general. But when I'm fulfilling my role as the kind of father figure for the troops at a Christmas service, then it's appropriate for me to cry. And men continued to weep through the whole 20th century ban on on crying.
Is there any suggestion that there is an emotional loss if you are trained out of crying?
Well, I think that we now certainly have that view. That is, that if you can't cry, you don't have the full range of human emotional response, and that it's therefore a kind of handicap or a disability of some kind. The idea that that was important in the therapies of the 1970s, for instance, that you needed to cry in order to free up repressed emotions, and that crying was necessary to emotional health, I think is not in fact true. But we do have a sense, we definitely have a sense that we need to be able to cry because it's a basic form of human expression, and so why not?
Can you give me an example of a culture that has very specific rules for crying?
All cultures have fairly specific rules for crying. I mean, they're not conscious. That is, we learn them on the fly, and not everybody learns them as well as other people. But we all know that not to cry on the bus, unless we want to be thought in complete distress. So we may read a particularly moving passage in a book that could, for instance, get us to weep in private, but we will control it in public, in a public place, like on a subway. Now, some cultures, for instance, in Korean culture, mourning has very, very elaborate rituals that have been codified. So there are books about when exactly you're supposed to cry, in which place, wearing which kinds of clothes, on which day of the very, very long and protracted and elaborate funeral rituals.
Let's look at the other side of that equation, if you will. What is it about two hanky movies that is so pleasing to people? Why do we go to these things? I mean, Titanic is an example of a movie recently that produced an awful lot of wet hankies on the way out of the theater, and people loved it.
Yeah, now, and two hanky, that's a kind of not a great one, because of the four hanky is the one I keep hearing, but the four hanky job. But the very earliest mention of crying that I found was a 14th century B.C., clay tablet, a fragment of a clay tablet. It was the story of the death of Baal, the earth god. This is from pre-Hebrew Canaan. And the virgin goddess Anat, when she sees her brother Baal dead, starts to weep, and the fragment reads, "She continued sating herself with tears, drinking of them like wine." So the very earliest representation of tears we have in human history is a representation of tears as a kind of auto-intoxicant, as something that can sate a person, as something that's somehow pleasurable, even in extreme distress. And many different cultures and Western culture at many different times has been very aware of that, of the pure pleasure of tears. I think that some of that has to do with the simple fact that when you're crying, you can be so overwhelmed with the sensations of your own body that other cognition largely ceases, that you can stop thinking about it. It's a pure kind of escape into bodily sensation.
Tom Lutz is the author of Crying, The Natural and Cultural History of Tears. He teaches at the University of Iowa.